Test 1 2, 1 2, test 1 2. All right, here we go.
This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the TrackOut Multimedia Studios just southwest of the Chicagoland area, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. Jeremy Scott. I know I'm a little tardy with this week's recording. I apologize. We had some technical issues with our Legends of Open Wheel Racing guests. We'll hope to have them on next week, but you'll really want to be tuned into that episode because it's going to be off the charts. Coming up in today's program, later on this segment, we're going to have John Phippen, the voice of Formula 4 United States, also the FR Americas Championship. Going to talk about their sim racing series that they have going on right now. Also, we're going to talk about the F4 FR Americas Championship. And Charlie Ante joins me. He is our driver analyst. We will be talking about some hot topics this past week in racing in our roundtable. He's going to be with us throughout the course of this show. So as always, your questions are always welcome at Inside Open Wheel on Twitter and Inside Open Wheel on Facebook. Simon Pagenaud makes it 2 for 2 in ovals for the IndyCar iRacing Challenge. Pagenaud won the Motegi Firestone 175 after a deal with Dixon. Of course, it didn't go without controversy in the final laps. Oliver Askew tried to unlap himself and then, well, he ended up in the mad graces of Will Power and Scott McLaughlin. Power took to task Askew at the video conference after the race and then texted him afterwards. And Power made a good point. He said, it's a learning experience for everybody. So we'll have more on that. But I think Askew may have learned his lesson on that, not getting the bad graces of the veterans. Also, the Road to Indy race took place earlier on this week at Road America, and Eduardo Barrichello took away Felipe Danese's win streak. That happened at Road America. He is, of course, the 18-year-old son of former Ferrari F1 driver and one-time full-season driver Rubens Barrichello. It was a perfect race. Singapore's Daniel Frost, who will this year contest the Indy Lights presented by Cooper Tire Series, scored his first virtual Road to Indy podium in second place, edging out Felipe Danese. So the podium streak continues for the young Californian as he finishes in third place. The final race is later this week, so we'll talk to one of those drivers next week, also on Inside Open Wheel. Do want to let you know, too, that Lando Norris will be joining the virtual IndyCar field this coming week at Circuit of the Americas. That was actually announced at the this morning at the time of broadcasting. So going to be interesting to see what he can do, see how many cars that Aero Schmidt-Peterson has. But we're going to talk more about guest drivers in the series. I, for one, like it. We'll see what Charlie has to say about that as well. So lots of sim racing going on this week. As we said, we've got the Road to Indy finale. There's IndyCar racing at COTA. Later on today, as of filming, there's the Formula Race Productions race. F3, F4 happened earlier on this week. So you have your fill of e-racing to get you through. And I know that a lot of people don't like that. Well, you can also watch past races on YouTube, so I've been doing when I've been on the bike, and it's actually been quite fulfilling. When we'll get to racing, you know, nobody knows at this point, but I, for one, am looking forward to seeing what these guys can do behind the virtual wheel. Joining me right now is the voice of Mid-Ohio, as well as the voice of FR Americas and F4 in the United States, and he's been doing some sim racing announcing himself. It's John Phippen. John, thanks for joining us here on Inside Open Wheel.
Hey, Jeremy. Happy to do it.
It's great to have you on. Let's go ahead and talk about this, the F4 FR Americas sim racing series. Looks like that there's been a lot of competition within the series in and of itself.
Exactly right. We're just so gratified with how well it's taken off. Amy Greenway, our communications director, has really come up with this concept, and she's certainly not alone, as just about every racing series in the world is relying on sim racing to fill the void of no race cars on track. And I think at our first race meeting, we had maybe 30 cars, something like that. And at our last race meeting, we had 46. In fact, we're having to turn some people away for our next racing event coming up tomorrow night because we're up at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park, and they have a limit of 32 cars. So we're actually going to have to put a waiting list in order to keep the countdown. But the Formula Regional America's sim racing series has been a resounding success. The drivers are all enjoying it, and we've gotten some pretty good feedback from the folks that have been watching on the stream. So we're just going to keep it up for another couple weeks yet.
Now, what kind of cars are you guys using in iRacing? Because you guys don't really have an exact replica of an F4 or what is essentially an F3 car.
Exactly. The F3 car that we use, the Ligier JSF3, isn't shown up yet or hasn't shown up yet in the iRacing stable. So we're using the old Dallara F3 car that was recently replaced by the current F3 machinery, but it's the Dallara F3, which is very similar to the car that we run in Formula Regional Americas. So the drivers have found that it translates pretty easily from what they've experienced in the real seat of the pants. So that's the car we've been using at all the tracks.
Now, from what I've seen also, a lot of these series, you know, like your IndyCars, your NASCARs, IMSAs, they're doing, you know, just drivers that are within the quote-unquote Premier Series. A little unique, though, with this racing series is you have drivers from F4 and Formula Regional Americas racing together.
Exactly right. We opened it up to all of the drivers that have competed or are competing with us in Formula Regional Americas, as well as those coming up through the ranks for the Formula 4, the F4 U.S. Championship drivers. And we then opened it up to guest drivers as well, who don't necessarily have to be affiliated with our series. So we've got a pretty good mix of drivers who have some experience in the Formula Regional car, as well as those drivers that are currently campaigning in F4 machinery, hoping to make the step up to Formula Regional perhaps in the 2021 season.
John Phippen, a man who's busier than I am behind the microphone, joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. Let's go ahead and talk about the real deal. Looks like that this year, FR America is with a great entry list, as if you're looking at the digital side of things, and F4 is doing pretty good as well. So great growth within the SEC Pro Racing community.
Yeah, we're so pleased with the growth of both series. The F4 US series made its inaugural run in 2016, and so this will be the fifth year for that series. And it has peaked at about 40 cars, about the biggest fields that we've seen, but has kind of stabilized the last couple of seasons at right around 30, 35 cars for just about all of our events. The F3, what was the F3 America Series, which has been rebadged as the Formula Regional America Series, started out with six cars in our inaugural season 2 years ago. And we doubled that in year two, and we're expecting to double that again in year three. And we certainly want to give a tip of the hat to our friends at Honda, who have really stepped up and created a scholarship for the champion of the Formula Regional America Series that will put them into the Indy Lights series the following season. So very similar to the Road to Indy ladder, there's now a way into the IndyCar ladder from the Formula 4, Formula Regional ladder. And Honda is, for the most part, responsible for making that happen. And we'll crown our first champion and move him into the Indy Lights series at the end of this 2020 season.
And how much of that is indicative of the success that Dakota Dickerson had in the past couple years?
Well, certainly it is. You know, our inaugural champion, Kyle Kirkwood, who was a back-to-back champion, winning the F4 championship and then the F3 championship as well, is the poster boy for drivers from our series. Kyle's gone on to win USF 2000. He's won in the Indy Pro Series, and now he's moving up to Indy Lights this year. So Kyle is the guy who's really grabbed the bull by the horns and made it happen. And Dakota is following in his footsteps. Dakota won the championship in F4 and then backed it up the following year by moving up into the Formula Regional Championship and won the championship there as well. This was before the scholarship that Honda put in place. So he's going to be racing with Ligier in IMSA this year in the IMSA Light Series. So looking forward to Dakota getting that happening. But he's also got aspirations to move up the ladder to potentially European racing to stay on the FIA ladder, which would next take him to International F3, then to F2, and hopefully to the Formula One World Championship as the top step of that ladder. But Dakota's a very well-rounded driver and certainly up to speed both in tin tops and as well as open wheel cars. So I expect his career to continue to blossom either on this side of the pond or across it.
All right, let's talk about Mid-Ohio real quick. A normally busy schedule for you there. Looks like that it might be getting a little busier as everything becomes more and more compact.
Yeah, the schedule for our racing at Mid-Ohio is, as it is all around the world, is very much a work in progress. We've already had to cancel one event, which was due to begin just in about 2 weeks' time, as originally our IMSA event was scheduled in the first weekend in May. And that's already been pushed back because of the social distancing requirements. So, you know, we've moved those races back deeper into the season. That IMSA event will show up in September now. The IndyCar race has also been moved back to accommodate the reshuffled IndyCar schedule as well. So we're all kind of adopting we're putting it in our calendars in pencil. Let me say that, as it is definitely a moving target as to where those race weekends are going to land. And of course, I have to juggle that as well as with my obligations to the F4US and the Formula Regional Championships. So, you know, I'm trying to juggle those two as well. We've already lost one of our Formula Regional events. The first event of the season was to be at Road Atlanta. That's been postponed. And we've had one cancellation already. And so we were so looking forward to making our debut at Trois-Rivières with the Formula 3 Festival as the Formula Regional drivers were headed up there. But the Canadian authorities have decided that they want to put that race on hold until 2021. So that event has been canceled. But we're still looking to fill out the rest of our schedule. We're keeping our fingers crossed that we can kick off our Formula 4 U.S. and Formula Regional Americas Championships at COTA first weekend in June.
I got to say this, Mid-Ohio in September is a beautiful place to be. I spent many a NASA championships out there. John Phippen, thanks for joining us. And once we get back to racing, we'll have you on preview F4 Formula Regional Americas.
Looking forward to it. And thanks for the opportunity, Jeremy. To all of your listeners, be well, be safe, and we'll get through this and get back to the racetrack before you know it.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back here on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, some technical difficulties prevented us from having our guests of the Legends of Open Wheel series. Hello, everybody. Jeremy Scott back with you. So we're going to kick things off with a couple of, well, one segment, really, that we're going to have in the regular season. Periodically, when big news pops up, and this past week has been pretty busy in terms of news, we're going to chat with our driver analyst, Charlie Ante. Charlie races in the Formula 1600 Championship. Charlie, I've known since he was at to date how long we've known each other. Charlie was racing in the Star Mazda series when we first met, so they had to be over a decade ago, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
God,
yeah, it's been a while.
We're old, man. I swear to God. So nonetheless, Charlie went off to race in Europe. He's come back here running 1600s. So, you know, why not have a driver who's done it all, seen it all with the experience? We're going to talk today about a couple things in the world of open wheel racing, but primarily in IndyCar. We're going to start things off with a lot of these series are coming out with these tentative schedules. IndyCar came out with those a couple weeks ago. As we know, we had Doug Bowles from IMS on the show talking about the third IndyCar race. I can't remember. Did Formula Race Productions end up coming out with their schedule yet?
I think they're sort of on a rolling canceling.
Okay.
So the last that I heard is that Barber was canceled. So then our next first race becomes, I forget whichever is after that. And then I'm just sort of waiting for the time that I get the email that says the next race is canceled, because it's pretty much inevitable at this point.
It really is. I mean, I'm trying to be as positive as I can about all this, but at the same time, I've mentally prepared myself that we're not going to see much. The only racing we're going to see is virtual racing. But like I said, I know IndyCar's done it. The Road to Indy series has a schedule. I've got to remember if F3 FR4 and FR Americas have a schedule yet. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, I know that I'm waiting for retracing to get canceled with Formula Race Productions, but nonetheless, I'm at this point wondering if series should just say, you know what, we're not going to come out with a schedule until we know for sure what the heck's happening, because you're giving fans false hope that a season's going to happen when, in all reality, we may not even have a 2020 season.
Yeah, I've sort of been going back and forth as I read these announcements. I'm kind of like, every time I read it, it's like, well, it's tentative, right? I mean, you have to assume that everything they put out is tentative, because nobody knows when this is going to end. It could end, you know, midsummer. It could not end for another year. So, and we just don't know. So I think from the series perspective, you know, they have to sort of posture themselves so that they have a plan ready to be starting up again when things are cleared. So I see why they keep coming out with these revised schedules, and I frankly think that they should just make it clear that book a trip, don't spend any money on it, maybe, which is maybe not a message that they want to put out, but just keep in mind that things are tentative. This is our plan as of now, if things start getting going sooner, but it's not, you know, it's subject to revision in the future.
And I just checked the F4 championship, and they have their first date as COTA, June 5th through June 7th. Obviously, it doesn't coincide with a national or international championship. So they still have a tentative schedule. And I was even talking about this with some friends earlier on today, that I'm wondering if, you know, these places run, you know, if they feel like, okay, we're quarantined enough, we're gonna be safe about this, you know, socially distancing each other while, you know, working on cars, how impossible that is, I don't know, but if they're going to do this, I think it would look better at a place where it wouldn't be that noticeable. I mean, you know, you take a look at something, I'm gonna use Road America as an example. Because when you're watching the race, there's maybe two or three places where you notice that there are no fans there. And that's the camera that's driver's right coming out of turn five. And I'm trying to think what's another one. The one driver's left there at turn three. Those are the only two I could really think. So something like that, I think you might be able to get away with. An oval, not going to happen because, you know, you got all the in cars and they're going to see. There's no fans there.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, in normal times that would be a concern, but I think these days we all kind of understand what's going on and that things are different. And a stadium, a huge grandstand that's empty of fans, isn't really the taboo that it would have been a year ago and before. So I don't really know if that's much of a concern. I think the bigger concern is sort of creating a hotspot, because if someone travels and they have the virus and they don't know it, then it could spread to anybody from the time they leave their house until the time they get to the racetrack. When they're traveling, if they're at the race venue for a while, it could spread there. So it could create a new hotspot. So I think, you know, traveling needs to be at a minimum. And despite how most of us feel, racing isn't really an essential service. So I don't think that it's really that prudent from the standpoint of trying to stop the virus from spreading.
Well, and all eyes are going to be on South Dakota this week, as Saturday they are going to host a race at a dirt track. Now, it's a 4,000 seat venue, but tickets are capped at 700 fans, and they claim that the fans are going to be socially distanced. This is going to be at Park Jefferson International Speedway. It's called the Open Wheel Nationals. Governor Kristi Noem has advocated for South Dakota residents to practice social distancing and avoid large gatherings. But she's one of the few governors that haven't issued these stay-at-home orders like you or I are under. This is according to USA Today. Terry Carl told Kiloland.com, saying the way we figured it, we could probably have a little over 900 people 6 feet apart between each person, and we're actually going to be selling 700 seats. This race will be broadcast live online as well. We'll have the link on our Facebook and Twitter pages, but I mean, they may have just under 1,800 confirmed cases in South Dakota, but you get that many people in that close an area. Yeah, maybe an open area, but you're still going to have people, close together in the pits, close to the track. I'm thinking, part of me is saying they're playing with fire, but the other side, it's like, well, if you could do that, maybe you can have a race with fans at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be careful what I say, because there's, people, it's a bit bizarre, because it's a really weird situation. It's not like you step outside and you see, like, anything looks different aside from the lack of people. It's like, I walk outside, I go to the grocery store, I don't really feel like I'm in any danger. And so I think that tends to sort of trip people up and confuse them. So we're all itching to get back to normal as quickly as possible. And it doesn't feel like there's an imminent threat. And there may not be for most of us, but the more seriously we take it, the sooner it's going to run its course and the sooner we can get back to normal.
Yeah, so there's so much going on with this. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an expert. I'm just listening to what I'm hearing from experts. I'm listening, in my day job to what I'm hearing on the scanners and looking at the numbers of people who have a higher pay grade than I am. But I don't know. I'm torn on the South Dakota thing. So we'll see what happens. We'll keep an eye on that. In a couple of weeks, we'll report back and see if that has any change in effect.
I think just to put a point on it is, like what you said, we're not experts, so we should be listening to the experts. And if the medical experts and the infectious disease experts say that we shouldn't be doing these things, then we shouldn't be doing these.
No. Go ahead,
so
sorry.
I guess that's the bottom line.
Yep, I don't disagree. One promoter who is kind of out in front and center with this whole pandemic is Eddie Gossage. Yes, Eddie Gossage, Texas Motor Speedway president, thinks that if NASCAR does have a race at Texas Motor Speedway without fans, that IndyCar can come play too. Two problems with that. IndyCar's not going to play if NASCAR doesn't play. Actually, three. And if IndyCar doesn't come this year, well, they're not coming back to Texas Motor Speedway at all, because he, quote, doesn't see a feasible date. And that would kind of undercut IMS for their scheduled big weekend on the 4th of July with NASCAR. And I'm sorry if I'm Roger Penske, I'm not even going to allow it, because why would you let somebody undercut a prime weekend at your facility?
Yeah, and I guess with the underlying subtext of everything we just said, it's sort of, you have to see it, I guess, from a business perspective. I mean, the tracks, they pay the series to come to their tracks, and then they make that up basically with the ticket revenue, right? So without the ticket revenue, he has all these expenses. He has to pay the series to come. There might be a chance that they would cut their hosting fees. But he's got to pay security. He's got to pay the people that work in the paddock. And so he has a lot of expenses, and his major source of revenue has been pulled out from under him. So I can understand his, if he has both series come on one weekend, then he only has to pay for all these things once, which makes sense and would be advantageous. And frankly, I don't even know how he makes money. Maybe he gets some TV revenue or something like that. Or maybe he gets a bonus from the assigned, like the track side advertising.
See, that's what I understood, is it would be from the TV money. Now here, Nathan Brown of the Indy Star, who is he's the beat writer for IndyCar. He interviewed Eddie Gossage, and here's what Gossage said to the Indy Star. So without any revenue to support having to pay the per sanctioning fee of an IndyCar race without fans, there's no way to make that work. In a perfect world, everything goes back to normal and there are fans. And if it doesn't, our hope would be that NASCAR would look and see, well, Texas has that week of June 5th and 6th already set aside for the NASCAR Truck Series and IndyCar. Let's plug Cup and maybe Xfinity as well. We can easily run all four in one. If you do it without any fans, you already have in place the key staff, emergency, medical, fire, infield, hospital, doctors, and nurses, TV and radio networks, and on, you have that prepared. and there's a certain economy of all that would allow us to run without fans for an IndyCar race. Now, here's the problem I have with – there's a couple problems. I know that they're talking about having to, you know, scan for temperatures for everybody coming in. Well, you already have thousands of crew members coming in, you know, for the three NASCAR series. And you had an IndyCar, so that's another, you know, 100 or so. And then you have EMS workers. I, to be bluntly honest, I don't know how hard this COVID-19 is hitting the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but you have all those workers who are probably overworked anyway because they're having to do all these runs. Now you're expecting them to do a second job at Texas Motor Speedway for, you know, yes, it's something that they love to do, but at the same time, if I'm a firefighter and, you know, racing's here, but yet I have a day or two to rest, I'm going to take that day or two to rest because then my day job's going to suffer.
Yeah. And I mean, that also brings up another good point is that, you know, one of the problems in Italy when their hospitals were overrun wasn't just that it was full of people with the virus. It was that anybody else with any other health problems couldn't go to the hospital because they were full. So if you, you know, if somebody has a heart attack, they normally you would go to the hospital and they would do their job, and but you couldn't do that. Or if you were in a car accident and you or you broke a bone or something, you couldn't go see the doctor. So everything became exponentially more dangerous. And you know, racing is dangerous enough as it is. And so, you know, you don't, it's less than an ideal situation, to say the least, to have people doing something so dangerous when the hospital system, like you said, is being stressed more than usual.
And on a side note, North Carolina is trying to get NASCAR workers, crew members, and all sorts of their personnel as essential personnel so they can get started. They're also trying to see if they can run the Coke 600 on Memorial Day weekend. Great and all, but yeah, here's my thought, okay? If we don't go back to Texas, not a big loss. We already have there's already a world-class facility in Austin, Texas. If people get upset at that, look, take a look at how granted cart management was pretty stupid at that, but take a look at how Eddie Gossage treated cart back in 2001. I mean, yes, Eddie Gossage and Tony George had a great working relationship, but this is a new era of IndyCar, and if Roger Penske doesn't agree to that, I think he should, you know, walk, and if there's no time left on the contract, there are plenty of other racetracks that are going to want to host IndyCar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, this is all with the subtext of we have no idea when things are going back to normal.
Exactly.
So this is all tentative. It's all kind of subject to update every week or two, maybe. So, you know, things could be totally different next week.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up next, guests in IndyCar iRacing series. And because of these guests, should there be IndyCar racing on NBC? We see NASCAR racing on Fox. Should it be on NBC? More to come when Inside Open Wheel returns.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
We continue roundtable here on Inside Open Wheel. Once again, Charlie Ante, our driver analyst, joins us. If you missed the last thing, you definitely want to tune in because we're talking a lot about the upcoming schedules and Texas Motor Speedway. You can always catch that on many of our able platforms. We're on Google Podcasts, I should say. So you'll definitely want to subscribe if you have that. Still working with Apple. Charlie, can you believe that Apple is being so finicky that I had to change my logo again?
What did they say what the problem was?
They said that the logo, they have a link to like a podcast tester. And the problem was the logo was quote unquote too heavy. So the file was too big. So I'm playing around with this. I've got plenty of racing photos I can use, and I might just drag some from you if I need to. All right. So now we're going back into the sim racing world. We've been talking about that for the past 4 weeks, but that's all that's been going on. That's all the news we have. We don't have any driver switches. Oh, wait, we do. They're guessing IndyCar's iRacing series. We've seen Scott McLaughlin, which I don't know if I'd really consider him a guest right now because he's a Penske driver, and he may be doing a race this season. Jimmy Johnson ran a couple races. You had Dale Jr. run at Michigan. Kyle Busch ran at the last race at, it wasn't Iowa. Where the heck was it? I just drew a blank. The last race that they had. So, it was Motegi. That's where it was. I think it's great for the series to have guest drivers. I just heard today that Lando Norris will be joining the series at COTA. So that'll be
fun. Cool.
Yeah. So he'll I don't know if they're going to campaign a fourth McLaren car for him, or if they're just going to have Oliver Askew sit in the sin bin after what he did at Motegi. But
I have to be honest, I haven't been keeping up with the race to race events.
I've been
so I'm not sure what that's a reference to.
Basically, with a handful of laps to go, Will Power and Scott McLaughlin were running 1-2, racing each other. Askew was trying to get his lap back, got a little squirrely, went into Power. Power went into McLaughlin. That was the end of McLaughlin's race.
Oops.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, you know, and as we're saying, it's a good thing that it's happening digitally and not, you know, digitally and not in real life, because all that you just saved a couple $100,000 worth of damage.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth saying that we're really lucky to be able to do this in the first place. I mean, I don't follow other sports as closely as I follow racing, so I don't know if there's even anything that they're doing. But the fact that we can have all these, you know, we can still have some form of racing, and it's still entertaining, and it still lets us engage with the personalities that we see, you know, race in and race out. So it's really cool that we're still able to do that. And even from the participants' perspective, it's still cool that, you know, I can sit in my bedroom and race against people still. It's a little bit different, of course, but it definitely makes it a lot easier to pass the time.
Yeah, it's very neat to see this. I know that MotoGP, one of the toughest sports to have sim racing, in my opinion. They are doing their own sim racing, but with the MotoGP game on, I can't remember what console it's on either, but it's neat.
I happen to have it on the PC. I think it's on every console.
Okay.
Those games are actually a lot of fun. It's a little bit awkward with the controller, but
yeah.
Should they have guests? Yeah, I think so. I think it makes it all more fun.
Well, in your race, in your series, you had I know that Dan Clark was racing last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He had a couple other guests as well, but Dan was the one that really stuck out because it's like, because I wanted to text you beforehand, like, don't screw up.
Yeah, that's a name I hadn't heard since like 2009.
Yeah. I actually worked with Dan when I was PR for a regional touring series.
Hmm. What has he been up to recently?
Sports cars. Sports cars, and I need to catch him on Zwift one of these days. But it's interesting too, because you take a look at NASCAR, and we'll talk about NASCAR here in a bit, and what I think they're doing right about this. They are, they're not allowing guest drivers. I mean, they actually had Dale Jr., a former driver of theirs, qualify in an LCQ for their iRacing race, which I think is like, wait a second, Dale Jr. is the biggest name you guys have right now outside of, you know, Jimmy Johnson and Kurt Busch. What the heck?
So he had to qualify his way into the race?
He had to qualify his way into the race, yes.
Oh, I guess it's no different than like the real life Indy 500.
Well, here's the thing though, too. You know, you have, you don't have to, it's no different than the real life Indy 500, but these races with the IndyCars hosting, you don't necessarily need to, qualify into these races. You practice, qualify, race. No different than a real race weekend. But when you have enough drivers, you know, say, you're not running for points, so you run a rotating list of drivers, you have, you know, say Dale Jr. wants to run, fine, go ahead. Say, you know, Tony Kanaan wants to run, okay, you know, we'll put you in a car somewhere. But to sit there and say, we're only going to have our guys do it, this is the perfect opportunity for a NASCAR or an IndyCar or, a road to Indy to come in and say, we're going to have a big name come and mix it up with our guys that comes in from a different series, and vice versa. I think this is the perfect time to do it because there's no strings attached. Nobody's going to get hurt. Nobody's going to damage equipment. The only equipment that's going to get damaged is their own, you know, computer and steering wheel. Why not?
You know, I think it was about a year ago, I switched to a direct drive wheel. And I don't know how familiar you are with a different sort of, or your viewers are with a different sort of sim racing hardware, but a direct drive wheel is, it's basically an industrial conveyor belt motor that has been, the software has been changed and you stick a wheel on the end. And it actually, it's pretty, it's much better than like a Logitech or a Thrustmaster that has a different design, and it has much higher forces. So my wheel can get up to 25 newton meters of peak force, which doesn't, like, the number doesn't really mean anything to most people, but it's a lot. And it's enough that when you're driving around Indy in an Indy car and you start getting close to the wall, you have that sort of Pavlovian fear response of like, oh man, this is going to hurt if I hit the wall, because it's going to just going to jolt your hand so hard that it actually gives you a bit of a fear of pain. Obviously not to the extent of a real car, but it still gives you that little bit of nervousness that, oh man, this is going to hurt.
Okay, so you explained it better than I asked Scott McLaughlin that question a couple weeks ago, and he's like, I don't know. All I know is I have one. So, okay, that makes sense.
I wonder if he, I mean, maybe he doesn't know, because maybe he's just getting into sim racing for the first time, but I've been in and out of it for my entire life, and a couple years ago when VR really sort of became practical is when I really started to get into it.
Yeah, I need to get into that. I just got to drop the money on that. But then again, I've been throwing money at my bike. So, okay. I mean, but yeah, here's the thing. If they're going to, I'd love to see, I don't want to see just NASCAR guys come in. Bring in some IMSA guys. Well, they did with Helio Castro Neves. Oh, ooh, did they say that? Oh, I'm sorry. but bring in, you know, Ron Capps, bring in some guys from Rally Racing. You know, we're seeing Lando Norris come in. The more, the merrier. I would love to see drivers who don't run these cars come in and show what they have. Yes, it's not a real car, but they're fixed setups anyway. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's also maybe a question of bringing in sim racing personalities.
Oh yeah.
I know the sort of premier sim racer on YouTube is Jimmy Broadbent.
Yep.
He's been in the F1 races, I think. So, you know, and that's maybe not a new audience, but it's definitely a younger audience that follows those people. And so why not bring them in, have them mix it up with the real drivers, and then, you know, bring fans in from sim racing into the real racing, and then you know, we're all one big happy family.
And, you know, I know the people are going to say, well, Jeremy, that there is a series out there that already does that. Yes, I realize that, but at the same time, it's not a sanctioned event. It's just, you know, a bunch of sim racers who said, okay, we're going to use the Lara IR18. We're going to have these racers, you know, these racers from IndyCar, these NASCAR racers, this, that, another thing. It's a great series, but it's not a sanctioned event. I want to see these guys run a sanctioned IndyCar race with the sanctioned setup and show what they can do against, you know, the 22 or 24 full-time drivers that normally run in the NTT IndyCar series. So...
And, you know, I mean, you could get even crazier with the creativity. You could have, you know, say a series that each race has a different discipline and a different car. And then you get, you know, maybe 10 drivers from each discipline, including sim racing. And you say, okay, maybe there's 50 drivers, 30 qualify, and then you just let the chips fall where they may. You know, I mean, maybe you might have more oval or NASCAR drivers. If you have a simulated NASCAR event, you might have more simulated open wheel and a simulated, you know, IndyCar event. But you could have an entire series with every, you know, one race is sports cars at Sebring, one race is IndyCars at Indy or Texas, one race is stock cars at Martinsville, or I mean, you could get crazy. You could have Indy cars at Daytona or Indy cars at Bristol. You could let your imagination run wild, and this is all for fun. This is all to keep fans engaged with these series when nothing else is going on in the real world. So why not?
I would love to see Indy cars at Bristol. That's just But it kind of sounds like what they're doing this week with Dinner with Racers. They're actually doing this weekend, which is Thursday. So Dinner with Racers has been doing multi-class racing at different racetracks.
I saw the thing for Pooper Sebring. I thought that was hysterical.
That was hilarious. This weekend, unrestricted NASCAR versus IndyCar versus LMP1 versus Legends. Oh.
I think it was, what was the Pooper Sebring? It was the LMP2 car, yep. The old Acura, the Indy car, the current Indy car.
Correct.
I think it was like one of the rallycross cars, and then the truck.
The trophy truck, yes.
The trophy truck, yeah. And it was a 12-hour race.
Yeah.
Can you imagine doing a 12-hour race at Sebring in the trophy truck?
Oh, that would be amazing.
Some people did it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, that just, oh. You know what? I applaud my buddy Ryan.
So you know what? Maybe Dinner with Racers could organize this. Go completely insane. You know, in iRacing, their seasons are, they have four seasons a year on a 12-week rotation. And then week 13 is the infamous sort of break between the two, or between each season. And usually they keep the servers up, and that's when they introduce new content. So like if they have a new track, they'll load it up to the service or a new car, and then they can, it's basically they release it to the public. We all try it. They collect data, and they can use it to fix bugs and stuff. But also part of it is just kind of like stress relief. So they have a whole bunch of unofficial races or events that don't count towards your safety rating or your I rating. So you can go in, and the rules still apply. So you can get protested like if you drive the wrong way around the track. So you have to keep it like a little bit normal, but nobody cares because it's not going to go on your record. So nobody takes it seriously, but it's enough to like sort of make it semi interesting. And it's just not complete. It's not just complete chaos. But they'll have like a figure eight race, racing LMP cars on a figure eight track. They'll have, I think what's called the tube frame twister, where they mix up, the stock cars with like the Skip Barber car and some of the lower level open wheel cars. They'll have multi-class open wheel racing. And so this kind of sort of taking advantage of the fact that these are not real cars and safety is not a concern and financial problems are not a concern. It's not uncommon for it to be taken advantage of.
Man, I need to get iRacing. I need to spend the money, but then again, my you gotta talk to my wife on that. You can probably sway her more than I can.
Tell her that you're just it's research. You could probably find a way to get a tax write off for it.
Tax write off, maybe a sponsorship of some sort. I'll figure it out at some point. All right. Last but not least, we've seen that NASCAR has been on Fox the past two or three weeks. NBCSN has been hosting the IndyCar races, but with no races on tap, I will admit, last Sunday I did watch the 2015 Stanley Cup Final, Game 6. Hawks were at home. I was a little teary-eyed still when they won the Cup.
Back when they could still win?
You know what? Don't even start me on that Fire Stan Bowman. Should NBC look at putting IndyCar iRacing on their channel, not only for content, but to get people who are stuck at home eyes on the series, much like NASCAR did with the 1979 Daytona 500 when they got lucky with that snowstorm that hit the East Coast.
Could you reframe the restate the question?
So the question is, should NBC take the IndyCar iRacing Challenge from NBCSN and put it onto NBC to not only get more eyes on the series, but so the fans who are still stuck at, these people who are stuck at home with nothing better to do but to watch digital racing, get them used to these series and kind of show that, hey, yeah, we do this digitally, but this, the real thing's even better.
I think I spaced out on your question there for a second.
Okay. Yeah, I'll make it short. Should IndyCar iRacing be on NBC?
Should the simulated races be on NBC?
Yes.
That's a good question. I think you would have to look at the numbers. If more, because I think we're sort of seeing the fuzzy line between cable television and the internet and broadcasting on the internet. So, I mean, would they get more eyes on it on NBC? Because not everybody has cable, but pretty much everybody has the internet. So your reach is greater on the internet.
So here's numbers from Adam Stern. NBCSN earned 120,000 viewers for Saturday's IndyCar iRacing event from Virtual Japan, down from 202,000 at Virtual Michigan. Obviously, that's the junior effect. But I'm starting to wonder if maybe they would be able to get those 202,000 if they put it on network NBC.
It's a good question. I mean, I don't have much. I mean, yeah, it's hard to tell, I guess. I'm struggling because I don't know what the you're comparing. I guess in a way, you are comparing apples to oranges. Because,
exactly. Yeah.
I guess we can analyze the theoretical reach, because I don't think that if you have an iRace that you want to broadcast, I think that you could get more people watching online, because if you broadcast, people can watch it. If you broadcast it on NBC or NBC Sports, the only people that can watch it are the people with a cable subscription. So you're dramatically limiting your pool of people that you can broadcast it to.
And I know that I think it's IndyCar that's been actually showing the broadcast from NBCSN on YouTube. So we're not getting those numbers either. So not sure if those are combined. I don't think they're combined. I think that those are just the Nielsen cable box ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a catch 22, to be honest with you. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that things should have gone to online, online broadcasting a long time ago. So I would say just, put them on YouTube, publicize them as you would a normal race. I guess NBC would not be too excited about advertising something that they're not broadcasting. But they pay a lot of money to IndyCar, so they want to keep eyeballs on the series as well.
Right.
Even if they're not directly benefiting from it.
All right, and with that, let's go ahead and call it a show then. Charlie, thanks for joining us. We'll have, once we get more news other than sim racing, we'll definitely have you on board because, I mean, we got to talk about something.
I guess so. Right. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to come on anytime and talk racing.
And by the way, good luck in your sim race this week. Where are you guys racing at virtually?
We're at Laguna Seca tonight.
Oh.
We were at Lime Rock last weekend, and it was a lot more competitive than I expected it to be. I mean, I knew that some of these guys were really fast. I know Max Esterson has sort of been taking over the organizing from it, because the boomers that run the FRP series don't know how to use iRacing. So he's been taking the lead, and I knew that he was really good. He won the top split of the 12 hours of Sebring. So I knew that there was going to be some stiff competition at the front, but I didn't quite realize that it was going to be so many good drivers.
I wouldn't call them boomers, but I did have a chat with them a couple weeks ago, and they're like, it's over our heads. So, Charlie, we'll talk to you next time. And for that, we thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll let you know on Facebook and Twitter when we finally get where the Apple wants to host us, but we're on every other platform as well. Take care at Inside Open Wheel on Twitter and Inside Open Wheel on Facebook. Have fun.